Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Laura Saxon and I'm talking with Chris Gordon on Hellblazer Biz.
Everyone, I have the honour and the privilege of the company of Laura Saxon. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, you're welcome. It's always good to reach out and chat to people in the industry, and I just soak off the vibes of everybody. You know, it's something I would have loved to have done 20-odd years ago and followed my path then, but I went a different path. So just to sit here and listen to everyone's stories of how you're going through it and making it is, like, great.
Oh, it's all good. No, I'm enjoying talking. It'd be good. Be a good chat.
Good, yeah, I think we will. I've already discussed and got some new topics I'll have to write down, so, which will be totally, well, it's kind of off topic in a way, but back to topic, since you're a fan of two of my favourite shows, which is great.
Don't get me started on them, because you know that I will talk about in phrase.
I know, well, that's tough, because I'm going to start with Lucifer. I'll just bring that one up. I mentioned Lucifer then, because we were just talking about Tom Ellis, obviously, because I've reached out to him so many times, and his Twitter's so busy he never sees it, and his publicists just keep saying, we'll do it, you know, because we'll come back, circle it around, we'll table it for now, come back, and she's never said no. If she doesn't say no, I'm going to keep persisting. It's simple as that.
That's like I said, like, if it's not a no, then it's a yes kind of thing.
Exactly, so, exactly. Yeah. So I'm trying to do it. I was gutted because they've just had a convention in the UK.
Loads of my friends went.
Did
and
they?
They keep posting pictures and I'm like, I should have been there.
We were supposed to go, but I lost my job in London in October and I was contracted. I was at Home Office. government said, oh, never work in central government, I tell you. It's and I don't care, I will say that happily now. It's a horrible place to work. I had to put money away, obviously, in case. I've got another job, but it's still, I missed out then, because by the time I get a ticket, they're all sold out, and it's like, oh. I mean, I've had several of them on the show. You might not have seen, I don't know, I've had Maze, Amenadiel.
I need to check this out. Yeah,
Maze Amenadiel. Trisha Helfer's been on, and Amy Garcia, who plays. Why have I forgotten her name?
Not Trixie.
She's the pathologist.
Oh, you know, I like her. She's so funny.
She's one of my favourite characters in it. She's brilliant. Yeah. She's been on twice. I met her last year in Birmingham. As well, yeah, she came to a Comic Con in Birmingham and she was the sweetest. She came over and gave me a big hug and she was giving everyone a hug, so it wasn't just me, but it was great.
No, it was just you, the sweetest everyone, just you.
Yeah, no, she was really sweet and so it was nice meeting her and I have to say those are the guys I've had on the show. I'm trying to get the others, but I'm not going to say it's never going to happen. I'm just biding and pushing the time. But yeah, I've seen the photos of this weekend with everyone with Tom Ellis doing all this fancy stuff in the photos. And it's like, damn it.
Everyone, because loads of my friends watch it, because I go to the Supernatural convention.
All right, okay.
So I go to that. So a lot of my friends who go to that went to this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I just keep seeing the photos and I'm like, oh no, I should have been there. This is not good.
I keep trying to get Jeffrey Dean Morgan on my show as well.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I'm just saying, but you need to get him on the show. You have to get Papa Winchester. It's got to happen.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's apparently. I mean, I only watched a couple of seasons years ago, and I'll end up losing touch with it. So I'm gonna have to start watching it from the beginning again because it's about 11 seasons now, isn't it? Or 12?
No,
well, it's more than that, isn't it?
14.
Yeah.
I think we're on 13 or 14, I'm not sure. They're on the 300th episode.
Wow, that's crazy. So I'll have to get I'll have to get the Winchester boys on as well, that'd be awesome.
Yes, I've met them both at the convention. And they're really? So you have to.
Fantastic, they're more people I'd love to meet as well. Lucifer's a great show. I mean, they just have so much fun backstage. You know, you see their Instagram feeds and they're just taking the mick out of each other. Yeah.
Do you know, I'm one of these people. I'm such a weirdo. I sit there just watching like interviews, but not just interviews, like behind the scenes stuff. Mm-hmm. So I sit there and my mum will walk in. She's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Nothing. Just watching another behind the scenes video," like, all the time. It's so funny.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, Amy Garcia is brilliant on Instagram. She does them all. And like, I think some of the stories they said, I think it was Lauren German is the biggest prankster, which I didn't know.
Is she?
At the time, yeah. She said she is huge with her prank because she looks so serious, doesn't she, all the time. Mm. But she's not, apparently. She's got the most evil sense of humour. I think one time...
she was in Chicago Fire as well, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was.
And then she left, and I was like, why did she leave? And it made sense when I started watching Loose Fire. I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's perfect, perfect mix. I think one time, I think they said Tom Ellis went back to his trailer, and there's a shadow of a figure in his toilet. And it was like she'd got a full-size cardboard cutout of Tom Ellis and put it in his toilet in his trailer so he couldn't even get in there. Because she walked in, there was this big cutout of him.
But that's hilarious.
Yeah, there's just loads of stuff. Apparently, they're just really geeky like that. And especially Amy Goss, Ella. That's who she plays, Ella. So everyone who watches Lucifer and watches my show will be killing themselves like the last 10 minutes going, "It's Ella, you fool!" So yeah, of course, she admits she's a geek as well. So I think for me, from a geek side of things, that's what makes the show. It's the same with SEAL Team, which is another show, which I was going to say. They back behind the scenes pictures on there just look so funny that they have a great bunch of guys just having a good laugh and making it get right. It's just. And yeah, I've had three of those on the show as well, as you've seen.
I do. I've seen a couple of them. I need to like watch them all and look at. I don't watch the behind the scenes of that. I need to check that one out.
Yeah, I think it's best one for that is AJ Buckley does a great behind the scenes ones, and Justin Melnick, who plays the dog handler.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. See, names are escaping.
You're blanking, making me blank.
Oh, yeah. So he plays the dog handler on it, and he does loads of... In fact, when I was going to interview him, he apologised because he had to stand me up because we'd arranged to meet, and he stood me up, but he goes, I'm still filming at the moment. I was like, right, okay, no problem. Obviously, I appreciate that's, you know, it happens. Then he sent me a picture of him in one of the SUVs that they were driving in the desert. He's like that with a selfie, and the guy on the other side is AJ Buckley, I think it is, leaning out with his full carbine out the window like that, and they're literally driving. And I'm like, I'm buzzing. I was like, oh my god, when someone sends you a picture that they're, you know, from SEAL Team, and that they're out, they tell you're on set, then they send you a selfie to show you that they are actually on set.
That's pretty epic.
I was like, wow. Cool. Showing everyone my text message as well, so showing everyone my text at work. Look at that! Look at that!
That's seriously cool. That's like claim to fame right there. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I've kept the message as well. It's still on my phone. I was like, I'm not getting rid of that.
No, you have to like pull it into like save, screenshot it.
Yeah. Back it up. Oh, yeah. Everything's saved. Everything's backed up. It's like, I'm not missing out on that one. Oh, God. Yeah, so he does some really good ones as well. But again, that's a great show. So, but we're not here to talk about those shows, are we? We're here to talk about you. How long's that lasted? 7 minutes. That's lasted 7-8 minutes there of talking about everything before we actually get to talk about my guest who I've got on. So
It's fine. It's all about shows I like, so it's all good.
Exactly. We probably might delve into it a bit later as well. So.
That's fine. We'll like at the end we'll just be like, so Lucifer.
Yeah. And I won't spoil it because I know you're on season 3 binge watching at the moment, and I finished season 3. I've got one episode to watch. Never got around to finishing it, so yeah, I've got the final episode. Life's just been so hectic, I've just not had time to watch it. So I've got to get on there.
I've literally just watched the episode where Lucifer's got his wings and he chopped them off and they came back. Like, that's the one that I watched. I think it's the first episode of season 3, so.
Oh, yeah. That's quite sad in a way, but it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I don't want them, but they keep reappearing.
I love the different analogies in there, because I saw it, the symbolism of, you've got obviously Lucifer taking a break on, you know, the devil on earth, and then you've got his brother Amenadiel, the angels come down, and it's the mix of characters, because you see throughout the whole series the devil, you know, the evil incarnate, he gets a soul, and you can see kindness. He's starting to get the, he sees the love and the kindness of humanity, and he starts absorbing that. Whereas Amenadiel, in a way, in the first series, actually, you know, he was the opposite. He was an angel from heaven, or, you know, the good, etc. And he came to Earth and got twisted by the evil of the people. And it was, you know, it's a complete, is it juxtaposition is the word I'm trying to think of, where they just like turn completely, I don't know, I'm trying to make a big word.
Say, yeah, go with it.
Make a big word sound good. You know, about how the evil guy finds the finds humanity, and the one who's obviously the epitome of good and love starts getting twisted by hate and evil.
Yeah, because I watched the one where he thinks, like, it's God Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Is actually his dad. I watched that one the other day. Oh, I can't remember the guy's name. He's in he was in Psych and Supernatural. He played Kane.
Yeah.
And like I watched it and I was like, Will. I was like, I want him to be God so much. Like, because he played the character so well as well.
Yeah.
So I was just like, it's got the perfect look. I was like, he has to be God. And then he wasn't, and I was like, oh, I'm really disappointed now.
Yeah, it was. It was a good. That was a really good few episodes. Or a good episode. Yeah. He was very, very good. I can't remember the actor's name either, which is really strange.
That's going to bug me. Yeah, it is so much now, because I've like been watching him for years on the TV, and I'm like, oh, what's his name?
It's quite bad, really, isn't it? It's the same because I love doing as well. And when it comes to I know the names off by heart and annoy everybody by telling people who they are, and then I come to talk to him about you, to talk to you about it, and he's just like, my mind has just gone. See ya.
That's what mine is. And I can see his face and everything, and I'm like, what is his name?
I know.
Like,
you know, I'm going to have to look it up.
Look it up, you've got to tell me. I've got my phone here.
Yeah.
Oh, you got yours?
Yeah.
I think it'd be it.
Let's have a look at Lucifer. All right, okay, Lucifer.
Yeah, he was on Psych as well, and he played Kane on Supernatural.
Yeah.
Like, I know, all my friends are going to watch this and be like, Laura, you're so stupid. Like, it's, you know...
I'm not editing any of this, by the way. This is all going to stay.
Oh, God. They're going to be like...
So, everyone, please bear with while we're just doing this now. And let's have a look here. Oh, God, there's a huge cast list. Yeah, both looking at our phones while we're... So this is just a typical of modern society, really, isn't it? That we'll... You know, people actually sit and don't talk to each other anymore. We just sit on our phones and... and Google...
I'm going to look up Psych. I think it'll be quicker.
It probably will, because I'm looking at the cast list for Lucifer.
Timothy
Ormus.
Ombudsman. No, an ombudsman is a judge, isn't it? Amundsen. Oh, this guy.
Amundsen, yes. Timothy Amundsen.
Him.
Yeah, I've got him.
I can't pronounce his last name.
Timothy Amundsen, that's him. Yeah, he was perfect in the role. So sorry, Timothy.
Oh, good, weren't it?
Yeah.
I was sitting there and I was like, please be good, because you're so nice. Lucifer to like have a nice dad.
Yeah. He was. He was a very he was a great role. It's a great storyline as well. So, but yeah. So I've digressed us again to Lucifer. You see. So now I've got 12 minutes, 12 and a half minutes. I've talked about Lucifer.
It would just the whole episode would just be talking about Lucifer.
Yeah, why not?
And Tom Ellis in Miranda. Oh, I love Miranda. Just saying, off subject slightly, but Miranda, like Gary, isn't it? Like, I was like, oh.
That was funny. That's when we started watching it, and it was just like, oh right, okay. It's like, that's Gary. Because I didn't recognise his name. I was like, that's Gary. He's off from Miranda. Yeah. It's like completely different.
I want him to do like, you know how they always done the song? Like Miranda would always sing like a song.
Mm-hmm.
What was it the What Have You Done To It? That one.
Oh, yeah.
Want, like sneak it into Lucifer somewhere.
That'd be
just
fun.
So all the Miranda fans will like know what it is.
Yeah, exactly. What have you done today to make it feel?
I think he should sing it a little bit as well, like driving along in his car and it comes on. Be hilarious. And like all the Miranda fans will be like, yes, you got it.
That would be good. Or on his piano in Lux.
Yes. Oh, he's such a good singer.
He
right?
is. He like, plays piano and he's amazing. He's got an amazing singing voice as well, because he does all of that. That's all him.
Yeah.
And it is. It's just fantastic. Apparently, they all just sit and end up in tears when they listen to him play.
Oh, we're such fangirls right now, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. I know, it's terrible.
But seriously, he is good, though.
Yeah, he's very, very good. Yeah,
The whole cast, you couldn't cast them any better.
No, they're all put...
Perfect casting.
Exactly, they are actually perfect. So, Tom, if you are watching this, or anyone from Lucifer, please, Tom, get on my show.
So, and David Boreanaz. I mean, they did hashtag save Lucifer, so they could do a hashtag Lucifer on Hellblade Biz.
Yeah, I think so. I did have loads of support at the time for people tweeting out and stuff for it, but it didn't happen. But it will. It's going to happen. See, I'm now on Amazon Prime. Got... Yeah, now LuxCon's over. I did actually, that's why I emailed his publicist last week and said, well, LuxCon on, I know he's here. And I'm on Amazon Prime now as well, so I can say I'm on Amazon Prime in the UK too, and that's what Lucifer's on. So it'll be, you know.
Yeah, and you can get all the support of everyone who went to LuxCon, so. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, this has got to happen. We've got to make this happen.
It is, yes, it definitely. So kind of moving on from something to you, well, who's your favourite actor, considering I'm... Might not be Tom Ellis for the fact.
Yeah, so Tom Ellis, no, I'm joking. No, he is. I do like him. He's a really good actor. But female-wise, I really like Sandra Bullock. Mm-hmm. Like, I think she's really good. Like, she can play any character.
Yeah.
And she's, like, you watch it, and 1 minute she's doing comedy, and the next minute she's doing, like, The Blind Spot and being, like, full of guys. She's just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Guy-wise, I don't know. Like, I have a lot of, like, guy actors that I like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of hard. Like, I like Jensen Ackles, obviously, Supernatural.
Yeah.
I'm literally sitting here, and on my table I've got pictures of, like, cast members of Supernatural, and I'm, like, trying to think, like, oh, Charlie Hunnam. We met him in Wales Comic Con in December.
You were there, so was I.
Yeah. Oh, was you?
Yeah.
I was in the... We were the first people to meet Charlie on the Saturday, and I was like, oh, this is exciting.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Really good.
Yeah, he's a good actor. I mean, a name drop for you here. It's like I was at the hotel the previous evening interviewing Michael Biehn.
Really?
Yeah, for the second time. I did him 2 years ago. When he came, I got in touch with his wife and I came to the hotel to do it before Comic Con. And I did it this time and they agreed again. And he's a lovely guy. But we got interrupted by the Backstreet Boys. So I got halfway through and Howie and the other guy, I can't remember his name, he came from Backstreet Boys, burst in and like 20 minutes or stood there with pictures of Michael Biehn and the Backstreet Boys. And then, but in the background, all the Sons of Anarchy guys were all like, wandering around because they were all just arriving and going out for meals and stuff. And I was just like, I was sitting there going, wow.
Yeah, I only met Charlie because we literally bought, because I wasn't going to go. And then I saw Charlie Hunnam was going and I was like, I'm going to go now. So like, I bought my tickets like a week before the convention.
Yeah.
So I was like, just got his tickets. And then I wanted to get one with David Giantoli. I think I said his last name.
Oh, right? Yeah. From
who was in Grimm.
Yeah.
But I didn't, because he cancelled on the Sunday, I think, and was only there Saturday. So yeah, they didn't sell the tickets as much. But I got to see his panel with his wife. So I was like...
Excellent. Now, I did go. I ran out of money again because of the job thing. I didn't have so much cash, so I was trying to sort of spare them, but I got...
Oh, that's awesome.
With Carl Urban.
That's so cool.
He was really good, but he kept looking over people's heads when he was taking pictures. He just seemed a bit disinterested. And he was looking over people's heads and stuff, and it was just really weird. But yeah, no, I mean, there's some cracking ones. Oh, hang on, here you go. Oh, that's not it. Where is it? Where's it gone? I've lost the photo. No. This is a point of not being able to delete photos. Sorry, again, people who are watching this into this, who are just watching the top of my head.
This is where you just have to, like, start singing or do some random dancing.
Yeah.
Nobody will pay attention to you
or
being on your phone.
Yeah. Was it before Blackpool or was it after Blackpool? No, it's after... Where the hell is it?
I feel like you're asking me here.
Yeah, sorry. I've got 25,000 photos on this phone. It's unbelievable. And it's typical, because the one I've got all the ones for Comic-Con right here, and it's not there. And it was, like, literally the night before Comic-Con. Oh, there it is.
Okay.
Oh, it's horrible. Michael,
oh, that's awesome.
It's me with Michael Biehn, and then, obviously, the woman in the middle is their publicist agent.
Okay.
So, yeah, Michael Biehn and the Backstreet Boys.
Their panel was good. I watched their panel at Comic-Con.
Was it?
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. Excellent. I mean, I think Howie was saying he was put out by the fires as well. He hadn't been home for months because they'd had to be evacuated because of the California fires as well.
Oh, yeah, he was saying about that. And yeah.
It's quite shocking. Really, I've been living out of a hotel, him and his family. It's quite bad.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving back to you again, Laura.
We just talked about everything but...
Oh, right, yeah. I'll skip all these questions because I've got half of them here. It's like, well, yeah, you have got a good resume. You're building a good resume up as well. I mean, you've seen your spotlight and things, and you've got lots of TV back in there. You've got lots of, you did a lot of short films as well recently. In the past few years, you've been doing a lot of stuff. One thing that packs me up is you've got a tab called Pantomime. I love Pantomime.
Okay.
So you're Daisy in Jack and the Beanstalk and Dandini in Cinderella.
Yes.
Do you love...
So, my friend was directing the Jack and the Beanstalk. And she was like, Laura, we've got no one to play Daisy. And I was like, Daisy is in the cow. And she was like, yeah. And I was like, you want me to go and play a cow? And she was like, yes, please, because I have no one else. So I ended up playing Daisy the cow. Like, I don't really know how you play it, but there was a lot of dancing involved and stuff. So it was quite fun. And it helped her out. So it was all good.
Cool.
And Dandini was really good. I played Dandini before in another show. So I was like, yeah, I'm all set here. I've got my costume. I'm sorted. It's all good.
Yeah, slap on the thigh, Dandini.
Yeah. I got the thigh slap award. I can never say it. Thigh slap award for the show on that one. So
brilliant. I did a panto when I was in uni. I did German at uni, but I joined the local amateur dramatic society. So okay. I've always loved panto, but it's been close to my heart since I did a pantomime Dane. It was in the local theatre then. Did it for 3 nights in a row, and it's just the best thing I've ever done, because you can just let loose, can't you? You just like go, you go for it. And I mean, I think the girl there who played, well, there's a girl, got no idea why, I can't remember what the theme was, because there's lots of different, Mother Hubbard, I was Dame Trot, and they had lots of different characters in there.
Okay.
But one girl who kind of liked at the time, quite a few, she was dressed as a pink pussycat. So you can imagine... The stories of, because, oh, look, dear, a pink pussy has just appeared on stage. Yeah, so it was brilliant. And she got the, it was my friend Rosemary, she did Dandini, and she got, shown the thigh after his massive red mark on it from the constant slaps. But it's great, I mean.
Yeah, I didn't do it that hard. I was just like, I just do it a little bit, and,
No, she went all for it. Big 6 foot girl as well. She was just like rock hard. It was hilarious. But it's a lovely pantomime somewhere you can let loose, isn't it?
Yeah.
And just, I mean, at the time, it was 1995. So political correctness, well, it was still there, but it wasn't as big as it was now. So when you've got friends and stuff, most of them were friends, so we knew you could tease each other. So I picked out one guy, and I apologise to anyone, because this doesn't make me a phobic in any person whatsoever. Please don't know. The guy was my good friend, he still is. And he was sat in the front row, and he's a gay guy, and he was very obviously flamboyant at the time and stuff, and he was high in the student union, so he was quite high up. And he's a lovely guy, and I just went and sat on his leg. And I was just, I was Dame Trot, and we did our dance number, and I was just fanning myself, and I sat down, and goes, oh dear, sister dear, I think I've come over a little queer. And it was just like, so, apologies, please, that's not me being phobic, that was just,
That's so funny.
It was just ad lib at the time, and he was in hysterics, I was in hysterics, and we had a good laugh about it. It was a different time, different era, so actually I might have to cut that out, because I'll probably get sued. Someone in today's day and age of
no, it's funny. So my friend Julian, he played a dame. I think it was Cinderella. I think, and throughout the show, it was the last night. Now we kind of had a thing that on the last night you have to kind of mess around on the show a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So his makeup, he slowly turned into a cat throughout the evening. So at the beginning he had whiskers, and then he came off stage and put a little nose on and everything like that. The director didn't realise until she watched it back on the video.
Oh, no.
It's so funny. But, no, you have to. On the last night is, like, the fun night, right?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's a done thing.
Yeah.
It's a done thing. So do you prefer... I mean, you've done a lot of films and stage as well. So do you prefer stage or do you prefer the film?
No, I prefer film.
Yeah?
I'm a real filmy kind of... Like, I like stage and it's... good, but I'm one for, right guys, let's just go do it, rather than let's rehearse for however long, 3 months, whatever, and then do it, and then do it again, and again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy it, but for me it's like there's a, when you're on set, it's like a special feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's, yeah, definitely film.
Excellent, excellent. That's fair enough. I'll ask that to everyone, because a lot of people do a mix of both, and they're two different extremes as well, like you say, because theatre one, you can be rehearsing for months and months, and then you do it for, well, days, weeks or months as well, and but it's a different show every night, but there you get it wrong, and everyone knows you've got it wrong straight away, at least with film, you've got the takes and stuff. And it's, I mean, the other thing is, films, like, I mean, I did film 2 years ago, and it's just, I had a speaking part, thankfully, yay, in a British independent film, which got me the taste, that's what helped me start this off again. I was like, oh, I've got the bug, I want it back. but they kept coming to me and saying, are you sure you're okay, because it's a really long day. It's like, it's fine. I got there for 9 in the morning, ended up going at 10:30 at night for like 5 minutes of scene that I was in for the whole day. But I was just fascinated because, you know, I mean, I'm deviating, probably going to write ahead because of your directing and stuff that you've done as well. There's a lot of stuff in the background that people don't see and don't experience. And I think it's, as someone who, even as an actor, to watch and see how the whole production is made can enhance your experience and enhance your learning of how something's done in the film industry. Same with theatre, you can watch how the stagehands do it and everything like that. But with a film, you can actually see that, you know, a 30-second scene, for example, which I think one of mine was, took 25 takes. Not because of me. They told me, I got my lines right straight away, you know.
Right.
I was perfect. I was a one-take wonder, but they said they needed the different... They had one camera. And again, that's something with independent film, I think, is very different to Hollywood, because usually you've got one camera, one cameraman usually, and you have to take the different angles. So we had like 25 shots of the scene, and by the time I had to like slap someone with some books, you know, I was an office manager for that's what I've done for 20 years, so it was easy for me, so I was just like that. And the girl lady was from EastEnders, the actress, and I just kept doing it, and the director was like, no, that's too hard. I was like, what? I was supposed to be peed off with her, I'm just going like that. But obviously it was there. And then I was like, oh no, I'm really sorry. I said, I'm just smacking you right on your chest. And she's like, it's fine, it looks good. So I was like, yeah, but the behind the scenes, the camera moving and the angles and chasing the light to make sure that you get it all done before it starts going dark and stuff. So I'll talk about that in yours. How did you find that? Because you've, after all your acting that you've done as well, you've written and directed, obviously, A Perfect Moment, which is your first one, isn't it, your short that you've done, as in you've directed and stuff.
Yeah, well, I've written things before, but when I was sort of younger, like when I was just at drama schools and things like that, this was the first one that I've kind of gone out there and done it on my own and proper gone for it. And luckily I had my best friend Gabby, she was supporting me, and because she does a lot with film and everything, so that was really good. But no, I mean, it's the first one, and I've made a point of not just working in front of the camera, because I think working behind the camera, you learn a lot about what to do in front of the camera as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I've made a point of, and on stage as well, of working backstage, just so that I can learn kind of every aspect, because I think it's all good knowing one part, but if you don't know the rest of it, then you're very kind of tunnel vision on it. So I've kind of been going through all of it, but I came to the director, and on the day I was so nervous. I was like, oh my god, what if I get it all wrong, or like my ideas don't come. But it turned out really well. I was like really impressed with it in the end, and we had Tom Davis is great editor, so he edited it for us, and I was really, really impressed with the cast and the crew, and everyone was fantastic, so it was a really good one.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, and I think you're right, to be able to see it from all angles is a really important thing to do. I mean, not everyone can do it, not everyone can be a director, and not everyone can, you know, be in front of the camera or behind the camera, but when you've got that mix of both, it can really enhance your experience and enhance, like you say, now you've done your directing, you go away with that knowledge of understanding of what the director might be looking for, and assist, you know, helping out and sort of moving around like that. So what's A Perfect Moment about?
It's about, without giving it away, it's kind of a mourning, and it's following the characters and the family. It's all about the family and following them throughout their mourning and what happens. And then there's a bit of a twist at the end. So I can't say too much, because I don't want to give it away in case people don't watch it.
Right.
But it's that twist at the end that really brings it together. And wanted to do it so it made people think, you know, like, what if, like, what? Like, at the end, a lot of people, they came back and they're like, I watched it and the end reminded me of an advert. And I was like, I'm okay with that, though, because it's making you think. And that's what I like. I want you to come away from it thinking, actually, like, even if it's just for one person, that changes their mindset a little bit.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted. So I've had some really good feedback about it as well, so it's really nice. So.
Brilliant, fantastic. I mean, short films as well. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people who do films, you know, film shorts, and they are, to get the point across in such a short period of time, it must be, you know, a writer's dream and nightmare probably at the same time, because you've got, you know, you've got a finite amount of time to get this in. So how did you find that? You were obviously writing to make sure it could all fit in with a certain time frame.
To be honest, I wrote it, it's about 2 or 3 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my friend Mike, and he was like, oh, I want you to write me a script. So I wrote it, and then he was like, I don't want to make it. So I was like, right. He lives in America. Yeah. So I was kind of like just sitting on my laptop. And I got to last September,
mm-hmm.
and thought, you know what, like, I started going through scripts that I've previously written, because I've got quite a few on my computer, but they're like, you know, mediocre and whatever, but I found that one, so I was just like, actually, I really like it. So I was reading it and I was like, oh my god, it's so good. But like, you know when you read something that you forgot that you'd written, kind of things, like reading it fresh. But yeah, so I kind of, it was more for me about the shots, like making sure that the shots reflected the script.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's what a lot of people, they've got to focus on, and the lighting and everything like that, and sound is a big one as well, because without all that, then you could have the best script in the world.
So
writing it was, if I remember, because I can't even remember writing it, but I did write it, just put it, I did write it. But I just remember writing it, but without any idea of whether I wanted it to be long or short or whatever, I just kind of wrote it to how it flowed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
All right, brilliant, brilliant. That's great to hear. when's it going to be out? I mean, when can people see it?
It's on YouTube.
Is it on YouTube now?
It's on YouTube now, yeah. I
shall send the links out then, because I apologise for not seeing it yet.
There's a go. I'll send it over to you this evening.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'll have a look at that. I mean, that's what Patrick O'Malley, he's a friend on Facebook, he's quite avid as well. He'd actually asked that as well, about the surprises, being a director, after being an actor with the surprises, which we've talked about, so I'll just give Brian a shout out on that one. Because I've kind of stole his question, stole his thunder, sorry Brian. I didn't steal it, I forgot about it, and just saw it there, and I was like, oh. Like the professional I really am.
That's good. Thank you for your question.
Yeah. I mean, I've noticed something else on your little CV, on your little CV, your big CV, sorry, that's, you know, this is my terminology of our talk. It's obviously comedy improv as well. Now, this is another amazingly hard area, I believe. Is to do. I mean, I guess comedy, I mean, acting in itself is, it's not easy. People make it look easy, like yourself, obviously acting on stage and stuff on screen. It's people, you know, when good, you make it look easy. It's not, because there's a lot of stuff involved. I remember from 20, how old am I now? Oh my God, it's 25, 26 years ago since I did my A-levels and stuff in there, which is really shocking. It shows how old I am. but I remember, I was the first person in the UK to do Three Men in a Boat drama, dramatisation. It was me, it was my drama teacher, Mr. Johnson, who got the play drama. I think, there's a local theatre group in North Wales, and they'd just done a dramatisation of Three Men in a Boat by Jerome K. Jerome. And it was the first time it has been shown anywhere as a stage production.
Okay.
And I said I wanted to do it because I liked the book. So my drama teacher wrote off, and they actually allowed us to do 2 or 3 scenes for our drama exam from Three Men in a Boat. And it was before they'd even done it themselves. They hadn't performed it yet. So I can safely say I am the first person in the UK to have done Three Men in a Boat on stage.
That's pretty cool. I like that. That's a good story.
Yeah, it takes me completely nothing to do with what we're talking about.
We've just been going off topic for a
while. Oh, no, yeah. But yeah, so the comedy, yes, that's just to say, obviously stage, you know, acting is hard, but comedy improv, I mean, I'm sure you're fully, fully aware of the Mischief Theatre Group, who are my favourite people of all time when it comes to theatre. But yeah, seeing how hard it must be, to actually go on stage and do that. So that's kind of where I'm leading to in 10 minutes of rambling around the conversation is, how hard is it to get on stage and just do like improvisational comedy?
So I've done a lot of improvising on like murder mysteries and things like that.
All right.
And my character's always seem to be like the idiots. I don't know why. I don't know if they're trying to tell me something when they cast me in these roles. But because of that, I can just kind of let go and just be stupid for the whole night and just have fun and mess around. And so the comedy kind of just comes out in that, in just like just talking like this, but obviously in character. So I can just kind of go for it, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I'm not very good at telling jokes, I'll be honest. I'm not great at jokes, but just talking, it's like, yeah, I would, you know, make up jokes as we go along. So,
oh, that's good. It's a skill you have to have, really, you know, it's a very good skill to sort of be able to do stuff like that, and especially as an actress. Kind of helps, doesn't it, really? Like, you can just put on a character. I did, I touched it, I did wrestling. I'm, you know, at age 38, I took up professional wrestling, as in like WWE stuff, you see. There's a place next door. I was looking to get fit, and it got me fit, fair enough. I did it for about 2 years, and I could jump the top rope. I could stand and jump over the top rope in one bound. I could do leaps. I could do, run the ropes and then just flip in the middle of the ring. And to be fair, size well, quite agile in a way. Especially when all the other kids are all 16, 17-year-olds, and there's me, 38. felt a bit awkward sometimes, but obviously you had professional wrestlers come in and teach you, and it was great. Yeah. But the best thing, I loved the acting side of it. Again, because that's why I do my show and talk to people like you, because it's something I love. And I got into characterisation and gimmicks, and I was they tell me my character had to be Camp. I don't know why everyone seems to say it, but my character was Camp. So I called myself the Fabulous Flash, and I went in and I did this promo in my training, and I had everyone cry. I got told off because there was kids sitting there, but because it got quite risque. But it was like I'd come in and it's like, oh, Troy, he goes, don't you dare, baby. He goes, I'm gonna get you in the ring, baby. I'm gonna pound you in the ring, baby. And it was, you know, I just went off like that. And
oh, please tell me the footage of this somewhere.
There is actually. That. I've got it on YouTube.
Send it to me.
Oh, well, I wasn't dressed up. I was just in my training gear, but it was quite funny. But the kids, because they're only 16, 17, so they're going through a lot of confidence stuff themselves. And they were brilliant wrestlers. They would leap off out of the ring and the no limits. They'd just like run the ropes and just fly out and, you know, unbelievable stuff that I'd never even attempt because I was like, yeah, I'm not stupid. But when it came to obviously talking about the gimmick, they train you and they called me the Gimmick King. Because we'd go out and they'd give you, like, just as you're walking out in training, you walk out the curtains and they go, right, you are such and such a character, go and do it. And it was like, you are a gentleman, you're a, you know, a very aristocratic gentleman, go out there and that's it. And I'd just go out and I'd do it. I'd just like straight on the spot and they'd be like, how can you do that? And it's like, it's natural, it's just fine. You just walk out, just pretend you've got a top hat and things. Hey, well, hello there! And it's and stuff like, you know, the old hillbilly, it's like, oh. That's my best, my little lad, he was hilarious because he did it in Florida and I was like, shh. Because my hillbilly was like, yo, I got me a little boom boom stick, pull a little trigger, it go boom boom. That's my hillbilly.
This is going to become a thing now. I'm going to walk around the house just doing that. It's going to be hilarious.
It is. That's why I can think of it. Yeah, but when you're doing it around the streets of America, you go, I got mommy, boom, boom, stick. You put a little thing, go, boom, boom. Wipe them all out. You know what I'm going to do? You want to go down and have some moonshine, boy? See you later.
I'm gone. Funny.
So that's how bad my hillbilly voice is.
See, this is my sense of humour. Like, this is me and my mum. Like, my mum's like my best friend.
Yeah.
And me and her, we'll just walk around and just start randomly doing accents, just no matter where we are. It's so funny because you get the looks and they're like, what are you doing? But it's just, you can't help it.
No, you're right. Cause that's the best way to learn as well, especially, you know, to sort of develop yourself, is just to do stuff like that. I mean, I've got to say, the southern one's pretty much the only one. I couldn't do it. I tried New York once and I couldn't do it. It's like New York. I can't do that.
New York's a hard one.
It is.
I can say certain words, but that's about it. I used to work in a school, and I would always, like, go around just being really random. Like, I wasn't very good. I would dance up and down this playground and all the kids would follow me. It was hilarious. The teachers didn't find it very funny, but yeah. I thought it was funny, okay, so it was fine. But yeah, I would just walk around going, I'm going to get into the cab with a coffee, right? It's not a very good accent. I can't do it. But all the kids would walk around the school going, get in the cab, have a coffee. So none of the teachers understood why. It was so funny.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is, because I mean, it's coffee, it's like C-O-I, isn't it? Coffee. 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 Yeah. See, I'm crap at the American, the New York. I think the only other one I can do is foreign. Matt, what is it? I've got to think about it now. Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you get. I can't do it now. It's crazy. Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
And then you
bad.
Start
Jenny. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you start carrying on then. Yeah, but the the hillbilly's probably my best favourite one. Like, I'd like to meet my wife and my sister. Here she is now.
You know, people watching that and they're like, we do not speak like that.
I know, that's not, it's quite offensive actually, but I apologize, it's not meant to make offense to anybody.
I know, funny.
Many people who do that. I take it from Jeff Dunham, who does the little puppet, that's what I blame him. Yeah.
I like him. Silence! We'll see him. Walter.
Walter, yeah.
I like Walter.
I like Peanut as well. Let's get
I like him. He's got I think is it on Netflix? He's on there.
Mm.
You got to check him out.
I've seen quite a lot. I've got a lot of his shows. Jeff Dunham's brilliant. He's fantastic. So we're right. Yeah, so I told you this 40 minutes, and I've talked to you about your stuff about 5-10 minutes out of 40.
But we've been talking for 40 minutes.
Yeah, it's shocking, isn't it? I just looked now. It's like, oops.
That's fine.
Cool. I mean, going on, obviously, theatre, and you've got your own, you've got your own film out now as well. You've also got, coming up, I noticed, Emergency LA. You seem to be in quite a few episodes of this.
Yes.
Are you allowed to talk about that?
I'm going to be moving out once it gets greenlit. So I'll be moving out to Los Angeles. And then I'll be in Emergency LA and then Trauma One. They're like kind of sister shows.
Yeah.
So I'll be playing the same character in both. And, quite excited about that, just waiting on paperwork to be signed, and then I'll be getting over there. So yeah, I'm really excited.
Fantastic, that sounds great. I did actually see Trauma One as well. I didn't pick up it was the same character, because I was going to say you seem to have a thing for medical programming.
Yeah, it's just, it's the only character I can play, and
so it's kind of like, is it like an American Holby and Casualty type thing?
Yeah, I think so. It's like more intense. Emergency LA is based around like all the different kind of like police and medical, and then Trauma One is like the medical side, so I'm playing a nurse in that, and get to play nurse in both of them, so I'm excited for that. It's gonna be good.
Excellent. What kind of research have you done to become a nurse?
I've watched a lot of Chicago Med and just a lot of medical shows, real medical shows, so I'm probably watching the wrong stuff, but that's fine. I'll go with it.
Yeah, you'd be watching House and then you just turn up as a really grumpy person.
Could you imagine? I mean, it's so fun. See, I'm a bit of a prankster as well, so I'm waiting to get on set just to pull pranks. I love pranks. I do it all the time. We did it once and me and my brother pranked my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And we text her, hid his number and put, I've hidden the body now, what? Now, my other friend texts back and was like, ha ha, you're so funny, Laura. Even though my number was hidden, she knew it was me.
Yeah.
But my other friend, she didn't find the funny side of it, but I found it so funny. So my brother turned into this Russian hitman who was coming after her. It was the funniest thing ever. She sees the funny side of it now, so it's all good.
That's all right.
At the time, she was like, no, I hate you. Don't talk to me ever again. It was worth it, though. It was so funny.
Fair enough. I just saw something on Facebook before, which is perfect. When you get an unknown caller phoning you, just pick the phone up and whisper, it's done, but it was very bloody. And then hang up.
I'm going to do that. I love it when you get the calls from, like, they're saying, oh, you've been in a crash. My one is, yeah, I've been in a crash. I crashed my spaceship in space, and then Superman come to get me. And I, like, just literally go on this tangent of stories. I had one trying to sell me a credit card. I was like, yeah, I got the Batman card and the Wonder Woman card, and I've got all these different ones. Also, I got a couple of Marvel cards. I was, like, proper going for it. And I could hear them typing. That's what made me laugh so much.
Yeah, they've got to write everything down, haven't they?
Yep.
I think there's one I've seen, it was an American guy did it, and it was very similar to that. He's like, he'd phoned up, and they'd obviously asking, you know, obviously, etc. It said, do you want to, have you got insurance, or have you had an accident, or something like that? And he goes, why are you saying I've had an accident? And they're like, I'm just phoning to see if you've got an accident. He goes, hang on. He goes, and he said, he goes, you put the phone down, he goes, oh, he goes, it's a crime scene. I've told you to watch that body, okay? Don't get the footprints in the blood. Yes, what can I do with it? And he was on it apparently for 20 minutes. The guy ended up cacking himself because he's like, where are you from? You were the last person to phone this number. And he goes, what? He goes, I've got a dead body down here. We've got no one. Yeah, because there's blood everywhere. I've got no idea who's done it. You were the last person to have phoned this number. I want to know who you are, where you are. And he's like, I'm just a call centre dude. I'm not even in the same state. He goes, right, which state are you in then? He goes, because you're obviously working with someone. Who are you doing?
That's so funny.
Yeah, and this poor guy's like, oh.
Okay, so you got to send me the link to that one as well, because I need to watch
I'll try and find that one too. Cool. So obviously, yeah, emergency at LA and the trauma. Are they going to be out in the UK as well, or are they just going to be on the American?
I hope so. I think so. I don't really know much about behind the scenes on that one.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping it will, because, like, all my family want to watch it.
Oh, so. Yeah. I mean, they usually come out as well. That's a great thing about TV and stuff nowadays, on Sky and Netflix and stuff like that. They sort of bring them across, which is great. So it'd be good to see that. And Bomber Command as well, I've noticed. That's another one you've got coming up as well. What's that one about?
That one is...
Obviously, I know what it's about. Sorry.
About the war and... Again, it's one of those ones, I don't know much about it, because obviously we're waiting on all the green light and everything.
Yeah.
Until then, I'm kind of a little bit in the dark myself. But that's another one I'm going to be filming while I'm out there. And yeah, I'm playing a character called Maggie, I think. Maggie. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's all about the war. So it's like a different, I'm used to doing more current day kind of like film. So I'm really looking forward to doing something a little bit in the past and seeing a different kind of era kind of thing.
Yeah, so. And that period piece would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to reenact World War II stuff as well, so it's a great period to do. It's like, you know, lots of interesting. Obviously, it's grand. You know, your grandparents and stuff, or great grandparents if it's you, because you're probably a lot younger than me. So it's
my granddad would always talk to us. Like, and sadly, we lost him a few years ago. But when he was like with us, we'd have tin hat time. That's what we'd call it.
Right,
tin hat time. Just every war story that we'd heard 10 times already, but we loved them, and,
Uncle Albert.
I think I knew every story off by heart, so.
Yeah, like Uncle Albert, in the war.
Yeah, exactly.
I lost mine when I was really young, actually, and it was only after I'd lost him, I found out he was in the Phantom Corps, which apparently served under David Niven. Which you know David Niven, yeah? You don't know David Niven?
I'm going to say okay.
Right, look him up on IMDb. Guns of Navarone, Casino Royale. He's a big, big actor in the 60s and 70s. But he was also in the war, and he was a platoon commander. And they used to do stuff like the SAS did, went behind enemy lines and things. Ooh. And I was like, oh. But he never spoke about it. Even to my dad told me, I lost my dad 10 years ago this year, and he said his dad never talked about it. And it was like, because being in that sort of situation, they saw stuff, and he apparently spoke about it once to my dad's mum, and that was it. That was all he ever did.
My dad's granddad was a prisoner of war for a day, and the war finished the day after.
Lucky, is that?
Yeah, literally. And I think it was my mum's side's dad, I think. It was something like this. He was a prisoner of war and escaped on a tractor. So I was like, that's a pretty cool story. So.
Yeah. My great-granddad on my mum's side, I think, was shot down in World War I over Italy. Oh. And apparently hated Italians for the rest of his life because he said they all spurned him and didn't want to help him and tried to get him caught. So he hated. So probably in the space of 48 minutes on my show, I've now insulted Italians. I've now insulted Americans. But no, he goes, that was his experiences. He had to get from Italy all the way back to the UK on foot, and that was the best he could to get out of it as well. You can understand that's a completely different time than what we're in now.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Brian Patrick O'Malley has asked you a question again.
Yeah.
And he said, obviously, another role that you've done is JFK Jr. And he said, what was it like working on that? And did it reshape your view of the Kennedy family?
I haven't filmed it yet.
Oh, haven't you? There you go,
yeah,
Brian.
Yeah, great experience. No, yeah. I haven't filmed it yet. I'm filmed next year in New England. So.
Cool.
Yeah, but I've been doing a lot of research on Jackie Kennedy and, like, there's so much that you don't realise. Just, like, you know, like, the basic story, but until you actually go into it, it's like, oh, okay, so that's quite quite tragic, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot that I read, and I was just it was brilliant, man. It looks
it's
really
like,
good.
It's like the American royal family, aren't they, the Kennedys? They're just an immense, huge family with loads of connections everywhere.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, I'm looking forward to filming that one as well, so that'll be
excellent.
Good. Yeah.
So there you go, Brian. You preempted it by a year. Oh, dear. So, I mean, talking about, obviously, we've talked about stuff like, we've talked about everything, I think. But, you know, I mean, I'm very much promoting indie film as well. And obviously, stuff like, I think Netflix and Amazon and stuff like that, I think are perfect places now because it's just opening up the doors for a lot more independent film and a lot more, you know, like yourself with film shorts and stuff that can get out there and get seen and just get promoted worldwide, which is absolutely, you know, which wasn't there, not even, what, even 10 years ago, it wasn't there, you know, and it's just, I think it's stuff like that, I think this is a whole vibrant new circuit of independent in the UK, because that's, I just love it, it's an amazing scene to be in, so I'm just going to say, I've got no idea where this topic's just come from, it's just come out of just looking at independent, you know, that kind of thing, and it introduces people together in a really good network, and it's you've got your Hollywood blockbusters, you've got your Hollywood TV film, you know, like Emergency LA, which you're going to go to, they're proper big series, but then you come back to something like this where the independent circuit, and I just feel that it's a place where everyone can help each other, everyone seems to want to help each other and promote each other and push each other and work with each other and to get people's projects seen and get out there. And Kind of, how do you feel about that? That's kind of where I was getting to.
I'm doing a film at the moment in Wales. We're filming in Wales called Vampires versus Vikings, Odin's Abomination. So it's like really like, they're trying to kind of raise money to help charities and get out there. Mm-hmm. So everyone's doing it for the kindness and everything. But it's brilliant. I've learned so much. And like, my character's epic. I love my character so much. She's so cool.
Yeah.
And she's brilliant. But it's like, I've met so many really talented people that I wouldn't have got to meet. Mm-hmm. You know? So I think a lot of the time, independent films, it's like you said, because you're shooting off one camera, you then have to watch everything else.
Yeah.
So you learn a lot about like, starting from the bottom to work your way up, you know? Mm-hmm. If you're always sort of at the top, you're never going to learn, like, the basis. You know what I mean? It's like building a house, isn't it? If you haven't got your foundations, you can't build the house.
Exactly.
So I think independence really, really important. And I'm glad that Netflix and places like that are giving people opportunities now, you know, because not everybody has £1 million sitting in the account and can do whatever they want, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's really good that they're giving more people opportunities.
Definitely. I think it's as well, you do see the sort of the spirit in an independent film because the stories are fantastic. Like you say, the short films, you've got to get so much into that. Mm-hmm. And like you say, they haven't got millions of pounds budget, but some of the films I've seen, you wouldn't tell. You can't, you know, even the short films and stuff like that, you can't tell there's been bad budget. I think I talked to someone 2 years ago, probably one of the first lot was from a film called Pandorica. They filmed it in somewhere in the woods. The UK, but you know, he turned around. And he said the entire budget of their film was less than the budget for the Star Wars canteen. But you know, because their budget was like less. Yeah, the entire for the new Star Wars film, the food budget for the actors was bigger than their entire budget for the film. So it's like, you know, but the film was really good. It was very creepy, and you can sort of see that sort of spam. So there, it's in my DVD rack. Hang on, Tom can give me a shout. Oh, ow, my ear. Good job, Oz, actually. I've got something on underneath my T-shirt from the bottom down there, isn't it? Just realised that.
I have my pajama bottoms on. I'm like, totally dressed for it.
So have I. So I was just like, because I'm good job I jumped just in my boxer shorts, isn't it? Like, oh, crap. There you go, Pandorica.
Oh, that's a really cool cover.
It is. It's a good film. and they were great guys. But that, again, that's kind of, it's an independent film that's gone out there. And he's done, because of that, it's boosted. And it's got further, and he's got a lot further, and that's kind of where the through the circuit and through the helping each other, it's, you know, it's starting to get into more bigger budgets, and that's a brilliant start. And I mean, it's the camaraderie, because everyone sort of gets involved and does lots of different things on that, which is fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. Cool.
There you go. I just ramble out 20 minutes and get like one bit of it where I can actually ask you a question.
Yeah, but what you're saying is interesting to hear, so it's like I said earlier, I'm a listener, so I'm all good with that.
Excuse me. I couldn't find the mute button, sorry. Didn't want to cough down here. Cool. I'm going to actually have to draw this to a close, I'm afraid, because it's, you know, we've been chatting for an hour now.
Have we?
Yeah. It's been really fascinating. I've got a question, and I think this is going to be a fun one. Okay. But you might, if you've listened to or seen a couple of them, you might have gathered from it. If you've managed to stay to the end of them, that is, because they are long. Right. The year before, I had a guest on my show who has worked with Jim Henson for 30 years. He works on Labyrinth, he worked on The Dark Crystal, he works on The Muppets, he's a puppeteer for Kermit and stuff as well.
Okay.
He's in Star Wars, and someone asked me this question, and I thought, you know, this is such a fun question, I'm going to ask everybody. Everyone who I think might actually think it was a fun question to ask, because some people are like, maybe not. See how the interview goes and then find out whether this is a question that I ask people or not. So if you could have a Muppet created after you, what kind of Muppet would it be and why? And it could be a new Muppet, it could be a mix of one, it could be an existing one.
Do you know what? Right, you asked that. Me and my friend Gabby, we decided when I was younger to do this really bad kind of web series.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a Muppet in it. It was about Sarah and Aubergine was the Muppet. And they lived in a house together, and it was all about their lives. So
cool.
I'm going to say Aubergine, the Muppet that was in my little series.
And now you have to do the impression or the voice of that Muppet.
I didn't do it. She was just like really chatty. She was like, yeah, you know, I'm just going to like go and get my Chinese or whatever. She was like really chatty. And I didn't do the voice. Gabby did the voice.
Yeah. Fair enough.
It was really bad, but we loved doing it. And there was one about like Christmas. And she was like, nah, man, I don't want to go and open my presents. That's literally how she spoke. It was hilarious.
Fair enough.
It wasn't. Like, anybody watching it would be like, what is she on?
Yeah.
But to me, I found it so fun. So.
That's really good. That's fair enough. That's what you. That's the best thing. I've had other things. I've had Swedish Chef. Throw chicken in the basket. I sang my Kermit to this guy as well, and I don't know if he's impressed or not. I thought it was all right. And I was like, why are there so many songs about rainbows?
That's really good.
Hello there, Laura. Where were you on set, Laura? Have you seen Piggy?
Brilliant.
That's my little Kermit. Who else was there? Oh, Yoda's the other one, but he's quite loud. He's like, when 900 years old, you reach look as good. You will not.
See, if the interviews don't take, like they are, but if they don't, you're just going to doing voices of the Muppets, like you're set.
Yeah. Voiceovers, yeah. People keep saying that to me, and it's like, all right, whatever. I can only do it like for 2 seconds, then my throat goes.
Oh, that's like me with singing. I get like one note that sounds right, the rest are wrong.
So, yeah.
I blame it on my throat. Right?
I'm like Les Dawson. I can sing a song perfectly. I can sing all the right notes. They just might not necessarily be in the right order.
My dad says that all the time. He's like, Laura, I can sing, just not in the right order. It's fine.
Yeah. Oh, I just love that bat, Leslie. Yeah, he used to play the piano, and he used to say, I can play all the right notes, just not necessarily in the right order.
I've seen that sketch. It's so funny.
And he's brilliant, brilliant. He was brilliant. Cool.
Yeah.
So, Laura, is there anything, before I stop the recording, is there anything you would like to say to people who are watching or listening to this, who've managed to last through all my rambling talks and jutting the conversation this way and that?
Here's an award for lasting the whole chat. Thank you for watching. And, I don't know, what do people normally say? Like, thank you for watching, drop me a message. Tom Ellis, drop me a message. You know, it's fine. I'll keep an eye out in my inbox for it. It's fine. No, seriously, no, thank you for having me. It was really, like, a really good chat. I've never laughed so much in my whole life, so it's all good. I've really enjoyed it. And I hope people watch to the end.
I'm sure
if they didn't, then they're not seeing this bit of me saying I hope they did, so then it's fine, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So, but yeah, no, thank you for watching. That's brilliant. My message out there.
Cool.
And keep an eye out for all the shows and the films and stuff.